I mean, first of all, we did not start with an abundance of confidence. It has grown over the years. And so my first piece of advice, especially to aspiring entrepreneurs or anyone who wants to lead the charge on something, is just don't be paralyzed by perfection. Just start. I mean, we messed up and failed so many times along the way. So it's just more important with how you react to mistakes and learn from them and move forward. But yeah, don't be paralyzed by perfection. Just put something out there and iterate.
The Life in Motion podcast is brought to you by Actual Outdoors. They help build beautiful brands that highlight the approachable and authentic parts of outdoor recreation. Said simply, they keep it real. Learn more at actualoutdoors.com.
This is a Life in Motion audio experience, a podcast about travel, action sports, culture, and more.
What's up, and welcome to episode 203 of Life in Motion. I've got Cassie with me from Wild Rye, who's all about making technical mountain apparel to inspire confidence while helping get more women outside. And much like Illumin, they also give back to some amazing nonprofits through their sales. I'm excited to hear her story and why their mission is so important. Cassie, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. I'm excited, as I mentioned, that Alex from one of the previous episodes connected us, and definitely looks like you got some awesome things going on kind of within the apparel, but a very mission-driven business in that way, brand. But before we kind of jump into Wild Rye and everything, let's kind of start with, you know, who you are, kind of your background story. What got you into the outdoors in the first place?
Absolutely. Well, I guess starting from the very beginning, I grew up on a little island outside of Seattle, surrounded by trees and in a pretty remote area. Spent all my time outside. My dad was a big cyclist. My mom was a fanatic skier, so they kind of forced the outdoors upon me. That said, I was a team sport girl growing up. I played soccer, basketball, and lacrosse through college, even coached lacrosse after college. At the Division I varsity level, but quickly found my way back to the outdoors after, you know, I stopped coaching lacrosse and had a little bit more time to spend in the mountains.
That's awesome. And so, you know, it sounds like growing up early, you know, you got to kind of pick your activity, you know, whether it was going mountain biking or skiing or whatnot. So, mm-hmm. So you mentioned, you know, kind of despite that, though, you kind of, you know, went sort of the team sport route, in a sense, and then ultimately kind of came back to kind of the outdoors, which is more of a, you know, an individual thing. It's a, you know, obviously there's communities around it, but, you know, what you're doing is kind of individualistic. So what, I guess, what kind of drew, like, from that perspective, what kind of drew you to kind of both aspects of the, you know, the purely kind of team activity versus kind of the more solo community-based kind of outdoor activity?
Yeah, I mean, either way, whether you're playing team sports or the way I recreate outdoors, it's very community-driven. It's about the people you're spending time with. So, I mean, team sports, you don't necessarily have as much of a choice with who you're interacting with, but it typically does draw in some pretty rad human beings, and wouldn't trade that for the world. But I really got back in the outdoors because of the community that surrounded me and the love of the people that participated in outdoor sports. And for me, it's always been about community. I've never been someone who's, you know, I'm very competitive, but not someone who's doing it to stand on podiums or be faster than the next person. So yeah, it's all about the snack breaks and the photo opportunities and the fresh air and exercise and fun times with friends for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Kind of more the competition with yourself in a sense, you know, like you said, not really the glorification of sitting on a podium or anything like that, but kind of challenging yourself in that way. And that's what I love about, you know, any of those kind of activities, like you said, the community around it, and, you know, depending on what it is, mountain biking, skiing, you know, yeah, even hiking, all that stuff, you know, your community can kind of help push each other kind of to their own kind of personal limits in that sense and build it that way. So, So when you came back kind of to the outdoors, as you mentioned, what was the activity that you kind of gravitated towards first? Just general kind of going back to, like, you know, your parents' roots or what did that look like?
Yeah. So I lived in San Francisco in my 20s. I had coached lacrosse at Berkeley. And then when I stopped coaching, I rejoined the business world and worked for a marketing agency. And I found myself commuting to Tahoe every single weekend during the ski season. So really skiing is what got me to move back to the mountains. But a couple of years into my time living in San Francisco, commuting to the mountains every weekend, I committed to myself that within a year I'd live in the mountains full time by hell or high water. I would get there. And so, yeah, I moved to Driggs, Idaho, near the Tetons to take on a marketing manager position at Grand Targhee. And my first big purchase once I got there was a mountain bike. I was really excited to sort of re-explore this mountain biking thing. I hadn't owned a mountain bike since I was a kid. And just being back in the mountains full time and having easy access to trails, I was really excited to get back into that sport. So between skiing and mountain biking, that's what held me in the mountains and in the outdoors after my city life.
That's awesome. You know, I got to kind of taste and explore everything in that sense. And it's, you know, it's cool. Obviously, you know, you one kind of made that promise to yourself in a way that, hey, I'm going to, you know, kind of get out of the city, do kind of follow this as far as the mountain goes. And then kind of got the best of both worlds again, you know, between the skiing and the mountain biking kind of like, so, and it sounds like you're kind of more primarily a skier to start with and things transitioned. Did you, as you kind of shifted over, or I guess shifted more into one versus the other, did you notice kind of, you know, those same similarities as far as like the community and learning and maybe they kind of merged in themselves?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, so I live in Sun Valley, Idaho, Ketchum, Idaho now, and it's definitely a two-season place. You ski in the winter and you're either a mountain biker or like a trail runner in the summer months. And so, you know, half my friends are the same friends that I mountain bike and ski with. It's funny. I certainly like, I wouldn't say lose friends seasonally, but depending on what we're into, I see more of my mountain bike friends in the summer and my ski friends in the winter, but the communities are so similar, and just skiing and mountain biking with rad women pushing me every day to be my best. I don't know. I think I really deviated away from your question. But.
No, that makes sense. And it's, you know, cool to kind of, you know, kind of have both communities, separate communities, and kind of, you know, like you said, kind of have the almost two different seasonalities, kind of where you're located as well. So, that's really awesome. So, you know, obviously you have the outdoors background with skiing, mountain biking, everything. There's the community aspect of it, that we talked about. And then you mentioned kind of, you know, your professional background, you know, being marketing. It kind of seems like that is a pretty good trifecta for what ended up being Wild Rye as far as kind of building everything. So where did that kind of idea come from, or kind of what led to that in the first place?
Yeah. So after Targhee, I spent about a year at Targhee and I was offered what I consider my dream job. I was offered the role of global communications at Smith Optics. And it moved me back to Ketchum, Sun Valley, where I am now. I'd spent time in and out of my childhood years here, went to elementary school here for a bit. So it felt like coming home with my absolute dream job. And so during that time at Smith, we attended trade shows across every category of outdoor sport. I mean, from surf to general outdoor, ski, bike, you name it. And I just started to see this lack of representation of female athletes, product that really didn't feel like it was actually designed for us as women. You know, I think Smith was actually at the cutting edge of supporting women before it was, you know, sort of something that more brands did. They did a phenomenal job, definitely more progressive in that sense. But still, it was, you know, the male athletes got more money, they got more attention from brands. So long story, slightly shorter, Smith ultimately ended up relocating its headquarters from Sun Valley, Idaho to Portland, Oregon. And at that time I was given the opportunity to either move to Portland and stay with Smith or stay in Sun Valley and forge my own path. And I ultimately decided that this is home and this is where I need and want to be. And that led me closer to wild rye, I would say. There's a few other steps in there, but those two things sort of converging, the time in the outdoor industry at trade shows and events, seeing this lack of attention to women compared with Smith's departure from Sun Valley, my hometown, led me to wild rye.
Yeah. That's cool. Be able to see, you know, kind of, you know, obviously, you know, to be able to kind of recognize kind of that lack of representation in a sense, but also kind of, you know, almost sort of being in boots on the ground, like actually see it from a true industry standpoint, unlike just what customers don't see, obviously, and obviously it's good to see that's changing. So, and obviously that's also seems like kind of pretty big, you know, we can fill in the blanks between the Smith decision and Wild Rye, but, you know, regardless, kind of at that point, you know, I'm sure that was probably a tough decision to be like, hey, you know, I have this dream job essentially, and kind of set up with that, you know, do I want to kind of bet on myself and see what's next or follow it in that sense? So, that's awesome that you know, took the ladder and bet on yourself. But so what were kind of a couple more of those steps before you got to, Wild Rye?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, dream job, it was the most devastating time, which, you know, come from a place of privilege where that's one of the more devastating things that has happened to me. But, I was heartbroken initially. And I didn't make the decision about whether I was going to move to Portland or stay in Sun Valley until the day that our decision deadline was, like the day our decision was due. And I actually went to work the morning that our decision was due. And my boyfriend at the time, my now husband, thought I was moving to Portland. And there was something in me that just panicked and couldn't follow through with the move to Portland. So, So that's one thing. Then when I did ultimately depart from Smith about 4 months after our decision was due, I started a consulting business, and I consulted for outdoor brands on PR and marketing. And on one of my very last press trips with journalists, I was talking to an industry colleague and friend, a journalist, about how I really wanted to work with women-led brands and brands that really served women through this consulting business. And he immediately thought of a friend of his that I needed to talk to, this woman, Katie, who actually had the initial idea for Wild Rye a little bit more sketched out and sort of had started a business plan. And so we ended up connecting. It turned out we actually knew each other. We'd attended some of the same weddings in our Bay Area days. And we just got to talking, and I was so excited about what her vision was. And fast forward about a month later, we sat down at Outdoor Retailer, actually at the Nordstrom's Cafe across the street from Salt Palace. And I proposed to her that we partner on this thing. She didn't have budget to pay me, but we wanted to work together. And I was so excited to be just a huge part of this. And so she agreed, and we launched Wild Rye about a year later to consumers. So, yeah,
that's awesome. And, you know, interesting kind of how the, you know, kind of the backgrounds and connections and everything that kind of seemed to work out pretty well in that sense. And you know, what you're doing, of course, I don't know how the evolution kind of the brand worked, but you know what you do now, obviously the more kind of technical type apparel. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's a little more to that than, you know, just getting a, you know, a blank t-shirt and printing something on it, you know, something that's kind of mass produced. There's a lot more that goes into it in that sense. So kind of what were those, I guess, initial kind of phases, like kind of navigating through that aspect of it?
Oh man, we flopped so many times in the initial days. So Katie actually led the design and the operations factory communication in the early days. And she found a designer through Craigslist that we still work with today. She's been amazing. But yeah, neither Katie nor I had technical background or design experience or apparel, direct apparel experience on the product development side of things. So we contracted Kelsey to help us with our early tech packs and design of our early pieces. So that is how we brought product to market. That said, when product actually came to market, two of our four launch products were completely flawed. Our chamois shorts that we launched with, the bulk production showed up with the elastic leg bands sewn on inside out. So the silicone that's supposed to hold your leg bands in place was actually in the interior of the short. So that was a major nightmare. And then our baggy shorts, the bulk production came in a whole inch out of spec around the waistband. So a large actually fit like an extra large, and a medium actually fit like a large. And so, we could fix the chamois. So we had the elastic leg bands unsewn and re-sewn the right direction, but we couldn't do anything about the baggy shorts. So we had to, you know, launch with really awkward messaging that's basically like, we effed up. Well, you know, actually our factory's effed up, but so here's what you need to do if you want to buy these shorts. So things that could have sank us, and we were just so determined at that stage and a little beat down, but so determined to get there and come to market. And we knew that women deserved a better option, and we were excited to be the ones to bring women better outdoor apparel options that actually fit.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, what you create is a little bit different than kind of just the standard kind of apparel in that sense. So, you know, going through those problems with the factories and everything, I'm sure is stressful. And it's good to see that, you know, you guys were able to pivot and take that challenge kind of as a way to, okay, how are we going to get through this? And then obviously fix the next, or make sure that they fix the next batch.
We moved factories immediately after that. I'll tell you that. we actually tried to manufacture in the US, and that's what happened. And, you know, people ask us why we manufacture in Asia, and the US just is, there's such a limited opportunity to produce high quality, reasonably price point, technical product here in the US. So we moved to Asia after that mishap. And we've had just such better factory communication, much better accountability, and much better product, frankly. We learned quickly. US manufacturing comes with a whole nother set of challenges.
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't even imagine. So obviously, you know, kind of got through some of that stuff. As far as like, and I feel like I'm kind of jumping all over a little bit with the story, but you know, you had the marketing background and all that stuff. How did you initially kind of get the word out there? Because as you know, I keep using this example, you know, you have to have the products that you made, designed, spec'd out, shipped, all that stuff. So there's a lot more stuff that goes into it, rather than, hey, yeah, I'm just going to try this and see what happens. It seems, at least that's kind of the way I see it, but I could be wrong. So how was that initial kind of getting that word out there? Was there ambassadors? Did you do the trade show route? Like, you know, like you're kind of used to with Spy or what? Or Smith?
Yeah, Smith. We did not do the trade show route. We launched as a direct-to-consumer brand. So PR, my background in communications and PR was super valuable in bringing this, you know, gaining attention. I also had relationships with a lot of other brands. So, I reached out to every journalist that I could find in my Rolodex, and we got a lot of great coverage just because we were early to market in terms of women's first brands producing high quality product for women. So that was probably the biggest reason that we got attention in the early days. We'd been building up our social channel for about a year by the time we launched, sort of quietly gaining a following. Social media has continued to be a way that people discover us. We did a lot. We leveraged a lot of my industry relationships to convince bigger brands than us to join us in social media contests and giveaways to help grow our own audience. But we were scrappy. We had zero marketing budget. We didn't invest a dollar into paid. We did a handful of events. So boots on the ground events, interacting with consumers, and customers, we didn't spend a dime other than that. We didn't have a dime to spend, especially after the manufacturing mishaps.
Yeah, that's you know, cool that, you know, obviously using those connections and them being willing to do that and kind of saw obviously the value and what kind of the mission and the purpose behind the brand was. What was kind of the initial kind of community and I guess more or less, you know, the consumer feedback, you know, once the gear was getting out there and, you know, they're, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they fell in love with the shorts because whatever they're using for it didn't work or, you know, whatever. Was a lot of kind of positive feedback in that sense kind of initially?
Yeah, it was really positive feedback. That said, with plenty of room for improvement. I mean, our product has gotten just better and better and better. Those first couple of seasons, you know, with a bootstrap brand, there's going to be product issues, like almost without question. And it's a matter of iterating and improving upon that product and taking that feedback to heart that we're getting from our community and customers. And we still rely on our customers for, you know, what direction our line goes, what features are missing, and having that two-way dialogue with our community has gotten us to where we are today, for sure.
Yeah. So that kind of covers, you know, the, you know, kind of where the idea came from, kind of, you know, the initial launch, if you will, and kind of, you know, building out that community. And obviously kind of going back to sort of your origin story in that sense, you know, you really enjoying the outdoor community that came along with the different mm-hmm. activities. What was kind of the, you know, at what point did, I guess, you know, I'm sure that was always a focus, but when did kind of that shift, was it always like, you know, the collaborations with nonprofits and giving back, was that always kind of part of it? Or like what did kind of that side between the, mm-hmm. the kind of the community and the nonprofit part kind of look like?
Yeah. I can't fully remember, but it was always a part of it. We always wanted to, you know, participate in our communities and support our communities and support women as whole people, not just as athletes, because we've always believed that women are just so much more than their athletic pursuits. There's so many levers. I'd say She Jumps is probably the first organization that we really actively supported. Our missions just align so wholeheartedly. You know, She Jumps is an organization that's dedicated to equipping women and girls with the tricks and tips and tools and, you know, education and experience to get outside safely and confidently. And I mean, that couldn't align better with our mission. So yeah, we donated a lot of product to She Jumps in the early days. We didn't have cash to give necessarily. And then fast forward to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's passing in, I believe it was 2021. I think it was 2021. And it was just me and one employee at the time. And we were both just heartbroken, knowing that, you know, it was going to be an uphill battle for reproductive health care rights here on out. And as a brand that's for women and, you know, women identifying adventurers, like that was definitely something that we felt like we needed to take a stand on. So we launched our first of now four iterations of benefit tees to support Planned Parenthood in this case. And yeah, I mean, that sort of fueled my fire. It felt like the right thing to do for our community, the right thing to do for our brand. You know, I remember pressing send on that first newsletter announcing that we were donating to Planned Parenthood, knowing that it's somewhat of a controversial organization, but believing in my heart of hearts that it was the right thing to do for our brand and for our community. And there is definitely some fear in pushing that out there, because I believe that the majority of our community would support this and be thrilled to support this initiative. But I knew that there were likely some people that were going to have a problem with it. So, it's where we put our stake in the ground, is supporting women's rights and reproductive health care. And we actually just launched our fourth iteration of our benefit tea series today. And that's awesome. It's really exciting. People are stoked.
Well, good. I'm glad they're stoked. But no, that's awesome to be able to, you know, find find the organizations that obviously align with, you know, the brand's mission, and to support them. And, you know, even for, as you mentioned, kind of with the beginning with, you know, She Jumps, it wasn't necessarily a financial contribution, but it was, you know, more supporting, you know, the people they support through your clothes and whatnot. Yeah. And I think that's really important, you know, to figure out how to kind of work in that, you know, with, you know, as a brand, especially one that, you know, is within the outdoors, and there's so many different avenues of things you can support, in that sense, but, you know, finding the one that, you know, makes sense, mm-hmm. you know, to the brand. So it's cool that you're able to do that and kind of get that support. So, you know, as you, you know, kind of continue to kind of grow, and there's been really, iterations of that, kind of what does kind of the future sort of look like?
Yeah. I mean, Planned Parenthood, She Jumps are just two of the many organizations we support. We don't talk about it as in depth, but we're, you know, I think, like, I don't have the exact figures, but by 2025, I believe that 95% of our product line will include majority preferred content. So recycled, bio-based, organic, natural fibers content. So, you know, we have a really strong stance on supporting the planet as well. We're members of 1% for the Planet. We're certified climate neutral. We're B Corp as of, oh gosh, what year is it? 2022, I believe. So,
couple years.
Yeah. So, you know, there's sort of two philanthropic or arms, if you will. Like, one is for our planet and the other is for our community, which is a community of women. So, but we definitely lead with that support for women, and, you know, not just in reproductive health care, but we launched an initiative called Women Led Wednesday that supports other female founders and encourages the general public to shop from women-led brands, because women are grossly underfunded from traditional funding from banks and venture capital, et cetera. And yeah, I don't know. it's all an adventure. It's been really fun to you know, have this incredible platform that we've built with Wild Rye and use it for things that really matter to myself, to our team, and to our community.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it's cool you mentioned kind of that other initiative as well. Are there, outside of that, are there kind of any other things, or maybe like some, you know, surprising things that you might have seen, or maybe some surprising a tag you got on Instagram or something like that, that kind of like really encompasses, like, you know, showing kind of the impact of the brand outside of just, you know, the technical aspect of gear that makes sense for, you know, whatever the activity is, but also kind of that deeper kind of mission as well. Like, are there, you know, because I feel like, you know, that would be easy for the, you know, the women community to kind of get behind and kind of, and kind of show that, but also kind of, you know, rep, you know, what you're doing as well, or maybe kind of inspiring change in a different way that you might not have thought of initially.
You mean, are we getting like coverage and attention outside of the core outdoor space for these things, or? Sorry.
Yeah. Like if you kind of see, like, you know, the community as the customers kind of sense, oh, you know, maybe some examples of them trying, you know, doing their own thing in their location about something they're passionate about, but maybe there's some kind of tie back to them seeing a brand like yourself, you know, pushing that and kind of, you know, showing, you know, what they believe in and that change that you're trying to inspire and stuff. I didn't know if there's any examples.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in this, you know, our support for reproductive health care for all, our community has really gotten behind it. And, you know, I think it's given them the confidence to stand up and speak out and, you know, make their stance known in a more solidified way. You know, gosh, I can't think of like a tangible example. But yeah, I mean, our athlete team, we select athletes based on those who are involved in their communities and are actually standing up for their communities, organizing their communities above just simple, you know, or combined with their athletic prowess. You know, we are really looking for multidimensional women, and they are likely not the women that you're going to see on every podium, but they're influential in their communities and they're supporting their communities and taking a stand for the things they believe in. So that doesn't totally answer your question, but yeah, I think we are doing a lot to empower women to stand up, speak out, and make a difference in their own communities.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And you know, those different athletes and people and stuff like that, you know, I'm sure that's affecting kind of their circle of where they're located and everything like that, to kind of, you know, kind of that ripple mm-hmm. effect in a sense. So, no, that's really awesome. So I know we covered, you know, a bunch of different things, you know, from, you know, the start, kind of some production stuff, obviously kind of the mission behind it and some of those things. Is there anything that, I might've forgotten to ask, that I missed?
Oh man. I mean, I could go on for days just talking about all the things going on at Wild Rye, but I think, you know, in terms of the mission and give back and support of our community, we've nailed it.
That's awesome. No, I think it's great. And I think, you know, kind of all those pieces kind of coming together, you know, makes a lot of sense. So to that point, one question I always like to ask our guests is kind of one piece of advice that they can take away. And in this case, you know, I think your story is interesting, you know, from the outdoor background to moving to kind of having the dream job and starting your own brand. And then kind of within that brand, you know, like you said, you know, that first send email for the Planned Parenthood kind of collaboration or whatnot. It seemed like there was a lot of maybe challenges or things that required a lot of confidence to kind of do and push through because it's something that you believed in. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give to someone who maybe wants to start something on their own in that sense? And maybe it's also kind of mission driven, where it's that mission might, you know, might, you could hang on either side of the fence with that in some cases, but it's something that you truly believe in. Where would you, or what advice mm-hmm. would you give them to find that confidence and kind of move forward and push forward to ultimately kind of hopefully, you know, realize their dream?
Yeah. First of all, sorry for my dog. She's the chief security guard here at Wild Rye. Someone just entered the building and she decided that she needed to go attend to them. Yes, definitely have advice. I mean, first of all, we did not start with an abundance of confidence. It has grown over the years. And so my first piece of advice, especially to aspiring entrepreneurs or anyone who wants to lead the charge on something, is just don't be paralyzed by perfection. Just start. I mean, we messed up and failed so many times along the way. So it's just more important with how you react to mistakes and learn from them and move forward. But yeah, don't be paralyzed by perfection. Just put something out there and iterate. Also, you know, I'm a huge believer in, from a brand standpoint, of putting your stake in the ground for something. Not only is it the right thing to do, but it helps you stand out. So, you know, when I consulted for PR clients, I'd always tell clients that they needed to stand for something to stand out and rise above the noise. So yeah, trust your gut on what that stance should be and, you know, lead with your heart. If you as a founder don't believe in what you're doing, it's probably not the right fit. So, you know, when you're a small brand, you have the luxury and the ability to, you know, put your whole heart into it and let that heart shine through your business.
Yeah. I love that. And that last piece, I can definitely relate to, you know, if you don't have the heart in it, especially when you're starting out, you know, it's, mm-hmm. It's going to be much easier to quit through the hard times and the struggles that go through that if you don't truly believe in what you're doing. So I love that advice. So where can people find you online? You know, check out your stuff. Also kind of learn more about kind of the different initiatives and that kind of stuff, and, you know, maybe grab some gear.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find us on the internet at wild-rye.com or on Instagram, wild_rye_. It's kind of an awkward handle. But we'll be at events throughout the summer. We're headed to Sea Otter next week. I'm not sure when this is airing, but we'll be at Sea Otter. We'll be at a handful of events throughout the summer, which will be noted on our website. We'd love for you to come by, say hi to us in person. And finally, we are launching a 3-month pop-up shop on Pearl Street in Boulder. So if there are any Colorado folks listening, come find us in person on Pearl Street, and then retailers across the country. So yeah. please come find us, join us.
that's awesome. Definitely check them out, give them a follow, grab some stuff, and hey, if you're in Colorado, check out that pop-up shop. I'm sure it's gonna be awesome. So but I appreciate you coming on to share your story, and not only, you know, from the brand and product standpoint, but like I said, also kind of the mission driven aspect of it and kind of why it's so important in that regard. So thanks again for coming on, and I wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for listening. And hey, if you've made it this far and like what you've heard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and let your friends know about Life in Motion. Until next time.